This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
You're tuned into the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. Matt will be back on Wednesday. He's been on vacation for many, many weeks. Does it seem like that, Patrick?
Yeah. I can't even remember what he looks like anymore.
Yeah. Maybe he won't come back. He's been gone so long. I can't imagine he remembers how to get here anymore.
Yeah, maybe not. We might have to change it to the Patrick Lilia show going forward.
All right. Sounds good. I'll be a guest for you.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil. This is AM 950 and the Civic Media Radio Network out there in Wisconsin. And we have a special guest today. A lot of news today, a lot of things happening. We're going to get to... there's always plenty, too much to talk about. But I have a special guest in here today, Raina Meyer. Hi, Raina.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Hello. I'm going to put that a little closer to
Great.
You. There.
Oh, that's
right.
Better.
Yeah. Raina's not been in a radio station before, right?
No, this is my first time. It's very exciting.
Yeah. So she's marveling at the antiquity that we, it's a very old-fashioned radio station. My microphone is kind of new, but all the rest of them are old. But anyway, so the reason that I'm having Raina on is Raina is the campaign manager for Kelly Morrison, who you've heard me talk about and even have as a guest. She was on last Thursday. She is running for the state Senate, and she has had two successful campaigns for the state House. So in 2018, I'm the one who kind of talked Kelly into running and was sort of her campaign manager for a couple months. And my pledge to her as her campaign manager was to find somebody who knew how to be a campaign manager, in which I didn't even do that. She did it. So I didn't do much. But we got up and running. And Raina, when did you come in? Were you in kind of in the beginning of the door knocking interns?
Yes. So I started with Kelly in 2018, and I remember the first time I met you, Todd, was at Kelly's house in I think it was very early June when the interns first got together and met each other and met Kelly and became so energized about her campaign.
Yeah. She's just an incredible candidate, so she really fires everyone up.
Yes.
So you may all be wondering, so why is he talking to this girl? Well, I just think that this is an interesting, I talk because I was a candidate and because I have worked on campaigns, including Kelly's and current ones going on now, I have a little bit of a perspective that's different than what you hear on this station usually. Well, Raina's got a different perspective than I do. She's, first of all, very young. You don't have to tell us how old you are, but I think of you as being, super young. I won't even say how old I think you are.
Okay.
Were you in college when you first started in 2018 with Kelly?
No, I was I had just finished my junior year of high school.
Okay. That's actually what I thought.
Yeah. You got it.
So I probably have your age about right, but... the thing is that do you plan on like staying in this and making a career out of it?
I think that's the answer to that question changes with time.
Right.
part of that kind of just depends on the day, the week, because I mean, campaigns, they're pretty up and down. We've been doing such a great job so far, and Kelly has just been an absolutely incredible person to work for. Like, I could not imagine working for anyone better. Not only is she just an amazing politician, an amazing legislator, but she's also an amazing a very compassionate boss.
Yeah. Person in general.
Yeah.
That's how I find her.
100%. Yeah, she's a doctor, so she pretty much does it for a living. But yeah, I think, I mean, the worldwide and national political climate changes all the time.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I'm like, yeah, like I want, let's fight the good fight. Let's get stuff done. Let's mobilize people. And I'm ready and I'm energized. And then other days it feels a bit more tiring. And I mean, maybe not in the moment, but just the concept of going forth and doing it for years and years more. So, I think it's something that I'm very naturally drawn to. And I really, really enjoy it. I get energy from it. And there's a lot of really amazing people that work in politics. So I think, you know, even though it's hard sometimes, right now it's my plan to keep doing it.
Okay. Yeah, what I found is, like you said, amazing people working in politics. When I ran, I mean, it was one of the most incredible experiences of my life, as difficult as it was, especially, you know, when it was so red and I knew I was just going to, you know, get my ass handed to me, which I did. But people still kind of praised me for doing it and bringing the numbers up.
Yeah.
It was really, really hard, and it was a huge – and I ran twice, and which you kind of have to do. As hard as it was, and it made my, you know, small business that I own slowed way down for those couple of years. But like you said, the people – I think, you know, politicians get a bad rap in this country. You know, you've heard us talk about this on this show. Not you, Raina. You've never listened. You've never listened to the show.
I'll start for sure.
Okay. Starting with kind of the attitude that during the Reagan administration 40 years ago, where they're like, you know, the government, don't trust the government and everything. And so politicians get a bad rap. And all the politicians, quote unquote, that I met, first of all, didn't seem like politicians. But, you know, that's only because most of my adult life I've been told that politicians are bad. Politicians are – we need them, you know.
Yeah.
And so many people that I've met, it's the most valuable thing I've done in my life. And I started way later than you, obviously. But with – you, what, I guess the next question for you, because I really agree that being in this is – it's a little bit almost intoxicating.
Yeah.
But at the same time – even prepping for this show so I get a little bit more intense into politics when I'm doing this show for a week, like I was all last week. And then this weekend, I just felt kind of relieved, like, oh, I don't have to do a show today. Mm. And I, you know, listened to a couple records, and then it's like, yeah, I don't want to do the show anymore. I just want to listen to records. You know, you must feel like that a lot too. So what was your – what did you go to college for?
Well, shockingly, I studied political science.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
I double majored in political science and history, and I minored in public health. So I found that studying history was really, really helpful to in conjunction with political science. Because as people say, you know, history repeats itself, or at least it rhymes. So.
Right, exactly. And – again, that's what we talk about here a lot too. You know, it's important to remember all these things. You know, Ronald Reagan's looked at as sort of the hero of the right wing. And I remember him as, you know, being the most damaging president in the history of the United States.
Yeah.
So we gotta know our history. And I completely agree with you on that as well.
Yeah.
So when you – what made you then decide to join Kelly's team in 2018 when you were still in high school?
Yeah. Well, I found out about her campaign through someone who was an alumnus of the Minnesota Youth Council. So I was on the Minnesota Youth Council and really discovered my passion for state legislative work there. And then, you know, I was looking for ways to get involved with campaigns, especially because it was 2018. You know, Trump had just happened in 2016. So I wanted to really do something. And I found out about Kelly's campaign, and I thought, yeah, like, it sounds like a great opportunity. And then from the first time I met Kelly, I was really just in awe of the way that she spoke and the way that she carried herself and how authentic she was.
Mm-hmm.
And how she really, really wanted to use whatever talent she had to make our state and you know, hopefully by extension, our country a better place.
Right.
And that was really inspiring to me. And I just, you know, as the summer went on and, you know, I was mainly door knocking, also walking in parades and going to town halls and such, it just became so clear to me how important talking to people is and how important direct voter contact is. Because there's so much swirling around that we get caught up in, especially at the federal level.
Yeah.
And having conversations with people and hearing about what they really care about is so, so important.
Yes. Obviously, Kelly got a lot of Republicans to vote for her starting in 2018. She mm-hmm. still has them voting for her now.
Yeah.
I think I've told the story even on the air here before, but it was a long time ago. My daughter Eve, of course, has been she's in New York now at college, but before she went, she spent the summer working on Lauren Bresnahan's campaign, kind of the same way you were in 2018. And she at first was talking about this new candidate named Lauren Bresnahan, and everyone said, no, I vote for Kelly Morrison exclusively. And she had to explain, well, Kelly's running for a different seat now. You can vote for both Lauren and Kelly.
Good news.
And, which is great for Lauren too, but we just kind of laughed at that because Kelly has become such a rock star actually out in our area.
Yeah.
And do you live in the district as well?
No.
Just outside, yeah.
That's the funny part. Yeah, now that Kelly's district has been expanded, the Senate district, I'm a little bit closer.
Right.
But yeah, that's – I live in a much safer blue area.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, both my state senator and state rep are unchallenged. So
yeah.
I'm happy to trek out to SD45.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, we need your help. We're going to have to take a break. I hope you can stick around and we can continue the conversation because I feel like we're just getting started, really. So this has been the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil. We'll be right back. We turn around from upside down, but all it's seeing is shut up, drown. Now for torture, off the pain, just like the film of Michael Caine. The Civic Media Radio Network, The Matt McNeil Show. I am not Matt McNeil. I am Todd Mickelson. Matt is on vacation still. We're afraid he's not going to remember how to get back to the station on Wednesday when he's due to come back. So I'll be – well, I guess it'll switch then to the Patrick Show. We've already got plans for that. But anyway, we're talking with Raina Meyer, who if you missed the intro, she started working – on Kelly Morrison's campaign as a door knocker and an intern and, of course, did a few other things. In 2018, when she was still in high school, and now she's running a state Senate campaign for Kelly Morrison. And I have been watching the campaign very closely, and I think she's doing an absolute stellar job. So how did you end up, transitioning from being an intern doing primarily door knocks and stuff like that, working with there was probably a group of about 10 other people
about 10.
Around your age or close to the same age. Mm-hmm. And what made the transition to you now being her campaign manager?
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I started, I definitely wasn't thinking that one day I would be managing Kelly's campaign, especially that she would be at the state Senate level.
Right.
I mean, with redistricting, she decided to jump from House to Senate. After 2018, when I'd been an intern, in 2019, during the off season, I started working as Kelly's intern coordinator. Because, in Kelly's district, even if it's not an election year, we still got to be out there door knocking. And Kelly's held 25 town halls, so we were advertising those.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2020, I was still her intern coordinator. That was all remote. But it really gave me a great, great experience of managing. We had remote interns from the East Coast to the West Coast. And
because you had to do it remote, you could do it from anywhere.
Precisely.
Right.
Yep.
So what were the interns doing since they couldn't door knock?
They were making phone calls mm-hmm. and writing postcards. And it sounds pretty dull, but we actually found a way to make it really fun.
Good.
We would have like Google Meet calls, and at the beginning we would like have trivia questions, and we became a really tight-knit group, and it's been awesome to see them kind of move on to like managing their own campaigns and working in DC and stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then in 2022, well, Kelly asked me to actually manage her campaign when she was still going to run for state house, mm-hmm. Because I was going to graduate from college early, and it was, you know, the timing lined up, and I was just beyond when she asked me to manage her campaign because, you know, as I've said, I admire her so much, and her campaign means so much to me, and just having her trust in me that much was really an honor. So yeah, once the lines were redrawn in her district, we had a convention. Kelly succeeded in the convention, and then we moved right on to the general campaigning. So that's what we've been doing since April, really.
Yeah, I got to work with the team, even though I was primarily working with Lauren's campaign, but I got to work with your team during that convention.
Yeah.
That was really interesting. And, I mean, it was compared to 10 years ago when I started to run, and there we would have two people at the SD committee meetings,
wow.
Literally, you know.
Wow.
and then all of a sudden we were this – it was like watching what I've seen in movies of like JFK at the convention in 1960 and you know, not quite as big but kind of felt a little bit like that or an episode of West Wing, you know.
Oh, my
so
gosh.
So it was actually kind of – you know, more fun than it had been.
Yeah.
But really interesting. And, you know, you had headphones and a microphone and it was really cool and fun. So when did Kelly ask you to run her house campaign?
I think it was December of 2021.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yes. And it was just crazy then when the lines got redrawn, and it's really scary. And for a few moments there, I remember thinking, wow, is there not even going to be a place for her to run?
Yeah.
Which would just be, you know, so horrible.
Right.
And tell me about that. Were you scared and nervous too? Did you, what was your part in steering her to make these decisions? And tell us a little bit about that story.
Yeah. That was nuts. We spent, we never really stopped campaigning since Kelly won in 2020. We were always thinking about what we were going to do next and like how we were going to door knock, how we were going to get info out to voters. But we knew it's like February 15th, the new maps are coming out and we didn't know what was going to happen. And when the map dropped, it came out that Kelly was lumped into the same district as two other DFL legislators.
Right.
And that happened across the state. And what was really unfortunate is that a lot of the districts that happened to, it was mostly women. Mm-hmm. So there was something was going to have to happen. And really it was, we hopped on a campaign call and we were like, all right, this is what it is.
Yeah.
And Kelly, What really happened was Kelly thought about it for a couple days and we kind of just like just were quiet for a little bit. And then she came back and she reassembled all of us. And she was like, I think that this is what I need to do. And the thing about Kelly is that, you know, she's been an OBGYN for over 20 years. She has her own career. She has kids. She has a whole family. And she never was in this for her own self-interest.
Right.
So she was like, I think, you know, I've been in the state house seat in the heart of this new Senate district for how many years at this point? And I think that I would be the best person to represent it.
Yep.
So it was all Kelly.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I figured it was.
Yeah.
I didn't know what part you might have played. If it were me, I would have just left her alone for a couple of days.
Yep. That's what I did.
But if she would have came back with a different decision, though, I would have been working on her pretty hard. Were you thinking that too?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, I could not imagine. She's just too good.
Right.
We can't not have her in the legislature.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know that. That's. I mean, I think there are a lot of people in Minnesota, not just the district, that really feel that way.
Yes.
We got to keep a doctor not in the House anymore, in the Senate.
Yes.
But there was one question I forgot to ask you. Where did you go to college?
I went to Hamline University over in St. Paul.
Okay.
So, yeah, small liberal arts school. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I remember, too, when the lines were drawn and you know, I was and I'm not I've never been in an official capacity of on Lauren's campaign. I just kind of stay on the peripheral so that I can be the mean guy, come on the radio and talk mean about Republicans.
It's an important role.
Yeah, right. And I mean that's you know, Kelly is so positive all the time, and yeah. She doesn't ever want to be put in a position where she's got to, you know, I won't say it on the air, but behind the scenes, sometimes she can talk a little mean about some people, right? but she doesn't want to do it. And so I'm – whenever I have her on here, I tell her, you know, I'll be the bad guy. You be the good guy.
Nice.
And,
that's smart.
and that's why, you know, Lauren, I told her I'm not going to have an official thing.
Yeah.
But she had a lot of trouble with that decision because she was running for the Senate to begin with.
Yeah.
And then the lines got redrawn and all of a sudden, okay, no, you can't go up against Kelly Morrison.
Right.
So
it's Kelly Morrison.
Nerve wracking all the way around.
Yeah.
I'll keep you here a little longer. Can you stay?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Okay, great. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. We'll be right back. The Civic Media Radio Network is made up of AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, Devil Radio, 92.7 FM in Madison, WTTN 1580 AM in Columbus, WAUK 540 AM and 101 FM, The Shaw in Waukesha, Milwaukee, Bull Falls Radio, WXCO 98.9 FM and 1230 AM in Wausau, locally grown radio, WFHR 1320 AM and 97.5 FM in Wisconsin Rapids and Stevens Point, Lake Air WXCE 1260 Amory, and Air Support Radio 98.3 Oshkosh and 1100 AM WISS in Berlin, Wisconsin. And I want to say hi to Raina's mom, who we just found out. This just in. Raina's mom has been listening to the live reporting on
hi,
AM 950. what's your mom's name?
Denise.
Hi, Denise. Thanks for listening. It's my mom and your mom. I should have you meet. My mom's name is Dolores.
Hi, Dolores.
So we were talking about Reno and I were kind of going through a lot of the stuff that's going on in the district. For instance, I mentioned that Kelly's got tons of people showing up almost every day to door knock for her, as do a lot of DFL candidates. And what it looks like is that the other side kind of doesn't really, which is good for us. But I'm pretty astonished at all of the volunteers showing up for Kelly's campaign of all ages, very young and very old. You know, some and old people who've got more energy than I do. And
me
and,
too.
Yeah, right. And they go door knocking. I mean, some of them are going very, very often, and they're not getting paid or anything. They're just doing this because they think it's important. Tell us about a couple of the bills. So we were talking about Kelly's doing a thing on Twitter, and everybody should go and look at Kelly Morrison's Twitter. It is Morrison for Men, right?
Yep. Yeah. Number four.
Number four.
Yeah.
And go there and start. You can see all of her bills lined up. 28 bills. So she has a thing called the 28 days of bills. And I've been retweeting. I think I haven't missed a day. I might have missed Saturday. I don't think I missed Saturday. there might have been a day over the weekend I might have missed. I have to double check. But I went down the list and I have a retweet on pretty much all of them.
Nice.
But you were saying that her opponent has been saying, well, she's passed 28 bills, but none of them help anything. Tell us a little bit about some things that come off the top of your head that have helped in Kelly's district.
Oh, my goodness. Well, right. I mean, like I said before, Kelly's held over two dozen town halls. So she has a really, really good – and also she's knocked on thousands of doors just this summer alone. So she has a really good idea of what is needed in her community. She's done a fantastic job of representing them. And she doesn't take any special interest money either.
Right.
So she, you know, isn't beholden to any special interests. But she's done so much to help SD45. I mean, she's introduced legislation to address the water infrastructure issue in Mound. I mean, not a lot of people know about the fact that people aren't really supposed to be drinking their tap water in Mound, Minnesota.
Right.
I mean, the levels of manganese are really dangerous. And Kelly, you know, she really cares about clean water, and she's been hearing about this. I mean, door knocking, you hear about it from people regardless of their political ideology because mm-hmm. it's a water issue. It's like
even Republicans like clean water.
Right. And they should because, you know, it's life. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
And so she and, you know, session unfortunately ended before that legislation was able to be passed. But I mean, she's passed legislation to fund fixing an aging bridge in Deep Haven. She has passed funding for Minnetonka Middle School West roundabout. She has kept a close eye on Highway 7 safety. She introduced telehealth legislation and passed it when mm-hmm. the pandemic started. SciPact, which allowed people to get mental health care across state lines when, you know, some people left the state due to COVID. She passed funding for the Minnesota Youth Council to make sure that youth could get interested in government and feel like their voices were being heard. $600,000 for kids. And, you know, she's worked with dermatologists to get make sure that kids have access to health care in schools. And, I mean, there's 28 examples, and each one is as good as the next.
Yeah. Today is day 28,
yes.
The final day of 28 days of bills, and it is expanding access to RX, allows pharmacists to provide intramuscular and subcutaneous. See, she's a doctor, so we need her to think of these things that nobody even knows what we're talking about.
We got to get her back in here.
Exactly. But it's drug administration under a prescription drug order and participate in placement of drug monitoring devices. These are important things that only it takes somebody like her to realize is there's a need for it.
Yeah.
And 28 bills in a legislature that is so divided.
Oh, my gosh.
And tell us about the youth. You said that was you're kind of passionate about that. Tell us a little bit more about that to keep young people interested in politics.
Yeah. Well, I think it's so important to make sure that from a young age, people and kids feel like their voices matter. And because, you know, if they learn that early on, it's likely that they're going to carry that on throughout their whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, our Senate district has an incredible voter turnout, 92% in 2020, which is unfortunately very uncommon.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. our nationwide voter turnout levels are much lower than I think they should be. And I think that a lot of young people right now are feeling a sense of apathy with politics, and I've been talking about this a lot lately. But I think, you know, every election that we've been able to vote in, kids of my generation starting in 2018, it's been like a do or die election. The stakes mm-hmm. are so incredibly high that, you know, they're always getting bombarded with, you know, political messages and everything. And I think it's at some point just kind of exhausting, like how high the stakes are. So I think we need to listen to that and think about, you know, what kind of world are we building for Gen Z and after that Gen Alpha, and how can we make them feel like their vote is worth it?
Yes.
And
because they've been treated like kids their whole life because they've been kids their whole life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you know, beyond just making them want to vote, really putting up candidates that, like Kelly did for me, inspire them and mm-hmm. make them want to get out on the doors and talk to strangers about them or get out on the phones and champion them because they know that they'll make a positive difference.
Yes. And I think me having a daughter who's now 19 years old, a couple nephews that are about 25 and 23 or something like that. And I told a story last week about 10 years ago when the Republicans were trying to pass put an amendment on the Minnesota Constitution to outlaw gay marriage.
Yeah.
And my nephews at the time were like, you know, 13 and 15. And they were astonished because they hadn't been used to listening to politics or anything. So we were talking about this one night, and they overheard, and they're like, what are you guys talking about? And we're like, well, they want to make it illegal for gay people to get married. And they're like, what? Why? You know? And it really made me see that the kids have a completely different perspective. When I was their age, there was way too much homophobic joking around and stuff.
Yeah.
And I have just learned so much about your generation, and that to me, you all feel more evolved than my generation.
Mm-hmm.
And it really seems like, you know, as time goes on, of course, we get more evolved. But I thought we were in the clear in the 1990s. I thought we were all done with racism and homophobic stuff and anti-Semitism.
I wish.
Right, exactly. But now we're finding, you know, they were just hiding, and now they have permission to come out again.
Right.
And this is why, too, seeing you and other people your age starting back in 2018, you know, coupled up with me being exposed to Eve, my daughter, and her friends,
yeah,
and how different it was, I could really see that, okay, we need these people to take over.
Yeah.
My people need to be done.
You said it, not me.
Right. I know a lot of people your age think that, and I totally agree. I also, people were asking me a couple years ago about running possibly for the Senate because of my experience running for the House.
Yeah.
And my answer started to be pretty much in 2016, my answer started to be, I'm not a woman, so mm-hmm. I don't want me to be my representative.
Mm-hmm.
I want a woman. And I want young women to take over.
Yeah.
So I just think it's really important. And that's another reason why I thought it would be really fun to have you on, because I want other people to get this perspective of your point of view, how you feel about climate change and Roe v. Wade.
Yeah.
To see the passion from my daughter and her friends, things that we didn't really talk about that much. You know, I mean, I'm in politics so much that I kind of feel like she doesn't want to talk about politics with me.
Mm.
But then when the Roe v. Wade thing happened, it's like, wow, she's really passionate. She knows way more about this than I thought she did. Mm. And I'm doing all the talking here. I want you to do the talking.
No, I love hearing about it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but well, this is how I feel, and it's because of people like you, helping me evolve, maybe.
Yeah.
To see that, I want these other people to take over.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's so important. I think Kelly sees that too, and I think that's why her campaign is so fueled by people like you. I was really happy when I saw that you were her campaign manager.
Mm.
I didn't know you all that well, but I knew how sharp you were, and you're a young woman. And I just thought, that's really cool. I really like that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, sure. Another perspective about people who kind of work in the line you're in now, mm-hmm. like you said, things change so much, you don't know. You don't have a necessary plan, I know a couple other young campaign managers that, like, for instance, one of them has a girlfriend, and he's in Minnesota now, out of state.
Mm-hmm.
So his girlfriend is 1,200 miles away,
yeah,
and he wants to keep working on this, and he wants to choose interesting and challenging campaigns, possibly all over the country.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like, so, you know, I have a girlfriend I haven't even really got to know very well yet, and I'm thinking of this is going to go on for another 5 years. What am I doing, you know?
Yeah.
Do you think about things like that in your life?
That's a great question.
Uh-oh.
A little.
You haven't thought about it, and now I'm going to depress you.
Spiraling. No. I have always thought about, I was born and raised in Minnesota, and I am so incredibly lucky to have the network of support that I have. I have incredible friends and a really supportive family, and I don't really think about leaving. Because, of course, like when you're in college, you think about grad school. or about, like, you know, there's this exciting campaign in, you know, in wherever across the country. But I really, really care about what happens in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that whatever happens in Minnesota affects the rest of the country, too. And because I've invested so much here, because I really love and care about this state so much, I don't really think about how my career would affect my relationships, mm-hmm. or things like that, because I just see myself kind of being here. And a lot of my friends and loved ones, well, I should say my friends are, a lot of them work in politics too. So mm-hmm. a lot of us have like a really shared understanding. Like, I mean, right now during Get Out the Vote time, we all kind of have an unspoken message of like, okay, like we're crunching right now and yeah. might not have a lot of free
don't
time.
Be offended if you don't hear from me.
Right, exactly. Yeah, but I also wanted to kind of loop back to a point that you mentioned about
okay.
about older generations and younger ones.
Okay, we're going to yeah. have to do that when we come back.
For
I can't believe you're staying so long. But
I love talking about this stuff.
I think this is really interesting and a good perspective and something a little different than what we usually have on this show. So
yeah.
You're listening to the – I always have to read it. I have it in my head, but I have to have it in front of me. The Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back. The Civic Media Radio Network, Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil, and we're talking with Raina Meyer, who is working in politics. She's right now the campaign manager for a state Senate campaign for Kelly Morrison. So when Kelly runs for president, are you going to be her campaign manager or her vice president?
Oh, my gosh. I think I'd have to go with campaign manager on that one.
Really? Okay.
I think, yeah.
Okay.
At least, you know, maybe for the first term.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Then you can get a cabinet position.
Yes.
Right.
Which would be incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
we were talking during the break about the generational thing. Tell the story that you just told me about when you first were working on gun safety legislation.
Yeah. So, yeah, back in about 2018, 2019, I was really heavily involved in the gun violence prevention movement, like a lot of young people at the time. And, you know, there would be times when, like, we would be advocating at the Capitol and there'd be a bunch of young people, and older volunteers would come up to us and say, thank you so much for doing what you're doing. We're so grateful for it. And, you know, we messed everything up and we're so glad that you're going to come and, like, save the world, basically. And it would always strike kind of an odd chord with me because I knew that it was coming from a place of great intentions and mm-hmm. kindness. But I would also feel kind of like, you know, like
– you could still help us.
You could still help. There's still
yeah,
room
you did
for
mess
you.
Everything up. Don't expect me to clean everything. This is,
exactly.
this, I think, a lot too. I heard this a lot from black and especially black women voters, like in Georgia, where
yeah.
everyone was saying, oh, the black women voters are saving us. And they're kind of like, ugh.
That's not our job.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I just think we all need to learn how to be more thoughtful about all of that kind
yeah.
of thing. And that's why. So talk a little bit more about your feelings about this. You know, you said that you like hearing somebody like me say that we're stepping aside.
Mm-hmm.
But go on a little further about that.
Yeah, well, I think that, I mean, for so long, the society has been built on, you know, the clout and power of white men.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're seeing a turning point in that. You know, it's like state legislatures and at the federal level, too, we're seeing a lot more women of color, people who belong to the LGBTQ plus community coming in to hold positions of power. And that's so critically important. And it is also important for people who have held power for so long to recognize the role that they play in that system and to step aside when it's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But also in stepping aside, helping support the people who are coming in to fill their seats.
Right.
And figuring out how they can do that in a way that isn't obstructive and inserting themselves too far. But there's definitely power there that can be leveraged to help new people coming in.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I'm learning from you. I really try and keep a perspective like this, but I still need help.
Yeah, everyone does.
Yeah, everyone does. But what else can you think of that would from that you would like to say? You know, our listeners don't get to hear about the goings on in this world.
Yeah.
And you know, in this actual political world, one thing I always try and give as a perspective I learned, and we kind of touched on it a little bit. At this level, when you're running for something like the state house or the state senate, mm-hmm. what I found, you know, back when I was the candidate 10 years ago, I was scared to death to go door knocking because I thought, yeah. oh, I'm in a red district. Everyone's going to like throw mud at me and, you know, yell at me and stuff. And because yeah. I'm going to be their politician. They hate politicians and they hate Democrats. And,
yeah.
and it was completely different than that for me.
Yeah.
Tell me how you first felt. Well, like the first time you were going to do something and you were kind of scared. Tell me how that went for you.
Well, the first time I knocked a door, I remember the couple, I remember the dog, I remember the house. I was shaking. I was so scared. And I did it. I got it out of the way. And then, you know, I've knocked on thousands of doors since that first one. And what's really the best part of door knocking isn't just getting a supporter. Like, that's the second best.
Yeah.
But I think the best for me is talking to someone who has not had someone come to their door wanting to listen to them in recent memory, where mm-hmm. they open the door and they're just kind of like stunned.
Yeah.
Like, why are you here? And then when you explain, well, I'm here to represent someone who wants to know what you think and wants, you know, to earn your support, not to buy it, mm-hmm. not to fool you into supporting them, but wants to earn it based on what you care about. And seeing their face pleasantly surprised is
yeah.
such a good feeling because you know that that made a difference in their life.
Yeah.
And even if they're like, okay, I'll take the information, like thanks for coming by, and they don't really reveal what their beliefs are, interactions that I have with canvassers, it sticks with me. And it makes me think about they invested time and energy to talk to me, and that matters.
Yeah. Yeah, I had people tell me they never asked what party I was. They mm-hmm. they just said, well, I'm going to vote for you because nobody's ever knocked on my door before.
Yeah.
And and you start to realize that this vilification of politicians is really just a bunch of BS from the top because
yeah.
people do – I see people admire you know, other state legislators and, mm-hmm. and stuff. You know, people are like, she or he is my – state representative, and they feel proud of that.
Yeah,
feel proud of the person.
Yeah, most of the time.
most of the time, and yeah. most of the people.
Yeah.
I know I had people who were Republicans who were probably, you know, well, we know because of the numbers that we kind of looked at afterward that mm-hmm. they would vote against Barack Obama in 2012, and they would vote for me.
Yes,
because I knocked on their door.
Yep, you made the personal connection.
Right.
Yeah.
And like you said, I showed them you know, the respect of coming and saying, hey, I'm being completely transparent here. I'm running to be your state house representative. Do you have any questions for me? And they usually don't.
Right.
You know, or it's a personal, like, what is what I got asked was, well, what is your business that you own? I almost never got asked about actual political issues.
Yeah.
It was just a personal connection.
Yep.
And they appreciated that. And because when it gets down to it, everybody's a human being.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
Like, I don't know if this is true, but even people like Ted Cruz.
Well, that might be a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, a little bit.
No, but it's your point is very, very well taken. And mm-hmm. and I think, you know, ever since the 90s when politics became, well, and it was before this, but for a while it's been so market oriented, like yeah. advertising and a lot of artificial stuff that it's like this is that haze on top and people forget about the lived experiences and the emotions and everything that makes us human and how important that is to center in politics rather than all of this stuff that yeah. we see swirling around on TV and everything all the time.
Yeah, and it is it sometimes is difficult because everything's so heated all the time. I saw a great reaction to a guy, I can't remember the name off the top of my head. I was going to talk about it later, but he reacted to a woman who was there kind of heckling him about Roe v. Wade. Mm. But he had a very thoughtful answer. He said, you know, I respect your personal views. I just don't think that people you know, government should be pushing personal views on people.
Yeah.
I just thought it was the way he handled it was really good. We have to go. This has been so much fun. It seems like you've been here for 5 minutes.
I know.
We've been talking to Raina Meyer, who's Kelly Morrison's campaign manager, a very young worker in politics, and we're giving a new perspective. You've been listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Todd Mickelson. I'll be back here in Minnesota, but Wisconsin, you'll be listening to Devil's Advocates, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Thank you. It's AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in for today and tomorrow from the Matt McNeil Show. Matt is scheduled to be back on Wednesday if he can find his way back to the radio station after being gone for so long. Seems like he's been on vacation for about a month to me because I've been sitting in here for him. How long does it feel like to you, Patrick?
Feels like it's been about 2.5 weeks.
2.5 weeks, yep. Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I mentioned in the last hour that there was a politician who gave a very good answer to a woman who came to an event of his where she was there to kind of heckle him about the Roe v. Wade situation. And he had a very thoughtful answer. And these are the kind of examples that I think are always very valuable that we all, including me, need to listen to and take heed on, because like Raina and I were talking in the last hour, we in politics especially for years now, we forget that people are people. People are human beings. We're all human beings. We couldn't decide for sure if Ted Cruz is a human being, but you know, officially, I think he is, but I mean, everybody is an actual human being with feelings and things like that. Again, it seems like there are some people it's hard to tag that on, but I'm supposed to be going with this, right? I'm supposed to be going that human beings are human beings. Instead of, you know, being kind of smart alecky about it or humiliating this woman or anything like that, this guy basically said, listen, I have a lot of respect for the way you feel about this subject. You know, instead of saying, this is going to kill women, you know, like I might have done. I just might have done that. But, you know, I remember when I was a candidate, I was a much nicer guy than I am here on the radio. So I could see maybe going in the way he did. But he did it very well. He basically said to her, listen, I know you're passionate about the way you feel about this, and I have a lot of respect for your passion. I have a lot of respect for your personal feelings about this. He even went on to tell a story about a problem that his mom had during her pregnancy, I think from before he was born, and she was, you know, she had a lot of physical problems, and he kind of explained that the only thing that saved her life was an abortion because the pregnancy was killing her. And so he said, you know, I just think that in a case like that, the government can't be the ones to decide. So I have a lot of respect for your personal feelings, but I just don't think the government is the entity that should be using, you know, putting personal feelings ahead of other things, ahead of the safety of people and things like that. Of course, he did it way better than I'm doing it now. But I looked it up, and his name is Charles Booker. He's the guy who's running against Rand Paul. And in this, especially here in Minnesota, you're hearing all the Republicans saying, hey, where's Walz? He didn't show up at the debate and stuff. Well, first of all, the Min GOP candidates have been told by the Min GOP to not show up at League of Women Voters debate forums. Well, Rand Paul, when I was looking up Charles Booker here, the guy I was just talking about, running against Rand Paul, I see a headline that says Rand Paul skips the debate with Charles Booker. So, again, Republicans are great at projecting. Usually what they're accusing other people of doing, they are doing themselves. But some news that happened today, there was more gun violence at a school. Luckily, well, it's horrible either way. Only two people died. One of them was a teenage girl, and one of them was a woman, an adult woman. And people are talking about it in all kinds of different ways. You're seeing some kids telling their story. And even, you know, the kids who are not physically harmed in these situations are emotionally and mentally harmed severely in these situations. Shannon Watts writes, according to this happened in St. Louis, Missouri. According to St. Louis Public Radio, there were seven security officers inside the St. Louis school, but the gunman was still able to bring a long gun to the third floor where he murdered two people and wounded seven others. Then she wrote, it's the effing guns, because that's what it is. This was a 20-year-old man. We're also talking about having the age for long guns, certainly, but all guns being 21, because so many of these are being perpetrated by boys under the age of 21, even 18 and younger sometimes. Here's another statement that Shannon Watts included in that. SAC, I'm not sure what that is, it's some entity in St. Louis, said while police have stepped up patrols in the neighborhood where the shooting happened, he did not believe there were any other people involved and that the community was not at risk. St. Louis Public Schools Superintendent Kelvin Adams said seven security officers were at the school. SAC said the shooting took place on the third floor. Schools often have a code word they use for an active shooter situation. A 16-year-old sophomore said she could tell by the tone that it was not a drill. So they apparently have a word that they put over their PA system, but it's a code word so that the shooter doesn't know what's going on. But this 16-year-old sophomore said she could tell by the tone that it was not a drill. From her hiding spot in the back corner, she watched her teacher get shot. She was terrified that she was not going to see her parents or her grandparents anymore. So these are, they go on and on. And like I said, not just the kids, but anybody involved in anything like this, even if they're not physically harmed, they are emotionally and mentally severely harmed. So, that's some news that happened today. There was I'm kind of going through some headlines. There are interesting things going on with the Trump mess. There are interesting things going on in England right now that correlate to some things here in the United States. And I also want to talk about some positive things that are going on here in Minnesota. And more on Jensen wanting to get rid of the income tax here in Minnesota. So we'll talk about some of these things after we take a quick break. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. If you want to call in, it's 952-946-6205. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt. We'll be right back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. What did you do this weekend? Patrick, what did you do in the warm weather?
I actually had to do a lot of work, especially on Saturday, and then yesterday I had to come in and help produce, so I was kind of booked up.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, oh well.
I've spent a lot of time actually reading a book, sitting in the sun, and man, it was just turned into a huge sweat fest. It was hot.
Yeah, what book are you reading?
Oh, this weekend I was rereading part of – I like reading books about like bands and stuff. Like a really fun book to read is called Walk This Way. It's an Aerosmith book they wrote in 1998, I think, and it's just really funny because they're telling all the story about when they were first a band and the rise to fame and everything. The book this weekend was actually John Taylor, the bass player from Duran Duran, who I know people think Duran Duran's a bubblegum band, but their first two albums are really, really cool, not bubblegummy. Anyway, so I was reading, kind of rereading the, era from the late 70s and early 80s there, which I remember fondly, you know, because I was 20 years old back in those days. Reveal just how long my life is getting, but it's fun. Anyway, thanks for making me turn into a really boring sap for a little while, Patrick, just because I hate to lie. I should have just made up some book that makes me sound smart, but you know, I end up talking about the bass player of Duran Duran for 3 solid minutes.
Should have said you were reading a book about some astronaut cowboy on Jupiter from the 1930s or something.
Yeah, something like that. Where were you when I needed you? Anyway, so I mentioned there is a lot of interesting, not good things going on in Britain right now. They've been a mess since 2016 when they voted to go against Brexit, it's called Brexit. Basically, they're unincluding themselves from the rest of Europe, and they've been in financial straits ever since. Now, this is a conservative thing, and it was very messed with Russia played a big part in all of this mess as well. Russia, things are going just the way Russia was hoping. And the Conservative Party has been in charge, and they, of course, ousted their kind of crazy Trump guy just in September and got a new – he was the prime minister, Boris Johnson. They got a new prime minister to replace him. She lasted not quite 6 weeks, and she resigned because – she was saying, you know, we're going to lower taxes, we're going to cut spending, we're going to do all this conservative stuff that we keep learning over and over doesn't work, it tanks economies. And a lot of people in Britain are saying, okay, we need the people to vote now, not just the Conservative Party to pick their new leader to lead the country. We need to have a real vote. Because we're thinking that the Conservative Party needs to be out of power because they're completely decimating our country. And that's what happens. Do you remember Sam Brownback? Ordinary looking guy. Happened to serve as Kansas governor for a couple of terms. He resigned in 2018 to become the Trump administration ambassador for religious freedom. He was also, for a handful of years, the great boogeyman of Kansas politics. His tax-cutting experiment led to unprecedented backlash, and his social conservatism attracted few independents to his cause. He was, as a matter of fact, the second least popular governor in the whole United States, a fact weaponized by Laura Kelly in her 2018 race against human dumpster fire Kris Kobach. So, sadly, the name of this is, I'm reading from the Kansas Reflector, and this was written in 2022. The headline is "The Ghost of Sam Brownback Haunts Kansas Politics, But Memories Fade Quickly." And that's why we keep having this cycle of Republicans coming in charge, decimating the economy, Democrats having to clean up the mess. It's not going fast enough, so people think. And then Republicans say, see what a mess it is when the Democrats are here. So then they take power back and then they make it into a mess again. And then the Democrats have to come and try and clean it up again. And it just keeps going and going and going. Kansas actually remembers this more than a lot of other places because their economy just absolutely tanked. Absolutely tanked. It was scary. And now we have a guy running for governor, and you can probably guess which party he's running for because I'm tying him into this. Says he wants Minnesota to become the 10th state in the U.S. without a personal income tax, which economists say would require steep cuts to education and health care and or increases in sales and property taxes. And we talked a little bit about this last week. Minnesota right now does not have sales tax on clothing and food because it's essential to life. And Minnesota thinks that it's not fair to tax that because everybody, no matter how rich or poor you are, you need food and you need clothing. So clothing and food, essential clothing and food, I think if you buy like Oreo cookies, you might get taxed on it or something like that. But essential food, you're not taxed on it. But otherwise, we have a sales tax on other things. But we also have an income tax. Now, there's I didn't even really know how many states don't have an income tax. I think South Dakota doesn't have an income tax. But the states that don't have an income tax also have the most subsidy going to them from blue states. So it's because they can't pass have a budget. They can't get a budget in line. They can't fund their budget just to exist. Earlier this month, the Chaska family doctor, Scott Jensen, and former one-term state senator provided some details about how he would fill the $15 billion annual hole created by eliminating the income tax. Now, last week, I saw a chart, and I reported it here on this station, that the income tax in Minnesota makes up 53% of the entire budget. So getting rid of it, do the math. In a recording of a town hall with voters obtained by the Min Reformer, that I'm reading this, the Minnesota Reformer, I'm reading from this article from right now, Jensen floated an 8-year plan starting in 2023. He would use the state's current $9 billion surplus to fill gaps in the state budget, though he'd also turn to deep spending cuts. The details are still vague. He would reduce spending by 10% by 2027, though he provided no specifics about which departments or programs he would cut, and he would freeze state spending in the beginning years of his plan. So what does that mean? Freeze state spending. Does that mean roads are going to keep crumbling and bridges are going to keep falling? You know, we've got a lot of new jobs here in Minnesota because we're rebuilding the infrastructure. Now, of course, Republicans voted against that, but there's a lot of federal money being used right now because of the Biden administration and legislation that was passed under the Biden administration and a Democratic Congress. He provides no specifics. He would freeze state spending. Does that mean all these people who are working on fixing roads and bridges around Minnesota would just buy now? What would that do to our unemployment rate? all these things get intertwined at some point, Governor. Education is nearly 40% of the state general fund budget. If he were to hold education harmless in his 10% spending reduction, he'd have to make deep cuts to other areas, including health insurance for low-income Minnesotans and people with disabilities. He would have to make severe cuts to public safety, which would seem to fly in the face of his promise to reduce crime. Am I right? He would have to make deep cuts to colleges and universities and to highways. The $9 billion surplus, there was a Democratic plan that was signed off on by the leadership of the Republican Party here in Minnesota as well that was going to provide $4.5 billion for public safety. Don't hold me on the numbers. I think it was in quarters. But it was a lot of funding for public safety, a lot of funding for education. Funding for things Minnesota needs. That's how we could use the $9 billion surplus. He wants to use the $9 billion surplus to basically freeze everything else. The $9 billion surplus happened in big part because of the pandemic. So the $9 billion surplus, we're not going to have a $9 billion surplus every year or every 2 years. This is an opportunity for us to I'm going to use the term build back better because it's a good term. It's the right term to be using. We could be using this as a huge bouncing trampoline to jump off of and go sky high with investments in things we need to improve upon, like education, like public safety. We could invent new ways of handling things like public safety. But no, he wants to use the surplus because basically I want to have a political agenda that I can tout while I'm running for office, where I'm telling all of the right-wingers that I'm going to get rid of the income tax, which, of course, doesn't benefit working families hardly at all. It doesn't benefit low-income people at all. It benefits millionaires and billionaires. Now, this article, this is why I started by talking about Brownback and Kansas. The next part of this article basically goes on. The GOP nominees said these cuts would pay off. I think there's a darn good chance that we will become such a sizzling Midwest economic hub, Jensen said in the recording. That's what we should try to do, because if you don't try, you'll never know. Well, Kansas tried something similar in 2012. The result was economically unimpressive. Understatement of the decade. And a Republican legislature was forced to raise taxes to prevent harmful spending cuts. So Brownback cuts all these taxes. The economy in Kansas absolutely tanks. And then the Republican legislature had to raise taxes. Now, just like I just said, going on in the article here, Minnesota's wealthiest residents would overwhelmingly benefit under Jensen's proposal. A 75% reduction to the state's lowest two income brackets would still benefit high-income earners as they pay those tax rates, as well as they would still gain a substantial tax cut. Even with Jensen's proposed cuts and caps on spending, he would need to find more money to close the hole. If the state needs additional income, Jensen says it should dig into its $9 billion budget surplus. The problem, Jensen is proposing permanent tax cuts while the surplus would vanish. These surpluses are temporary, and those tax cuts are not, said Neva Butkus, a state policy analyst for the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. That money is not going to be around forever. It's not sustainable. These new details about a Jensen tax cut plan are a reversal from Jensen's previous statements that he'd used the sales tax to fill the hole left by eliminating the income tax, including taxing food and clothing, which are currently not taxed in Minnesota. Sales taxes are regressive, meaning an increase would put a larger burden on low-income earners. And he doesn't care about low-income earners because he doesn't think they vote Republican, because they don't. His reversal may be a recognition of the political blowback he's already received from proposing a sales tax increase. Governor Tim Walz tweeted that the sales tax plan was off the rails bonkers. That's more like what it actually is. Jensen said he simply was brainstorming. No, I didn't mean it. The idea to ignite conversation. He just wanted to ignite conversation, which he said previously about controversial and shifting views on guns, marijuana legislation, and abortion. Jensen on Sunday, alone on the debate stage hosted by KSTP after Walz turned down the televised debate, touted his tax plan. He said it works through a spreadsheet perspective. As if that's supposed to make us think it's going to work. Cynthia Bowerly, the former commissioner of the Department of Revenue under Governors Tim Walz and Mark Dayton, said in an email that Jensen's vague promises and programs could impede Minnesota households and businesses from planning their financial futures. That's a pretty big gamble for Minnesotans' personal lives and economy, she said. Some of us would like a little more certainty for our state's future. So this is just more proof that not just Jensen, but pretty much all of the MN GOP candidates right now, they don't understand what they're doing. They don't understand what they're getting into. It seems none of them understand what the job they're running for entails. It seems none of them know what their job would be if they were to win the elections. So we need to vote. Don't forget to vote. Don't boo. Vote. Anyway, on the other hand, there are some good proposals from the other side. And we'll talk a little bit about those when we return. You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. We'll be right back. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil for today and tomorrow. Matt's due to come back on Wednesday. Let's go to the phones. We have a caller on the line, Lynette in Chaska. Hi, Lynette.
Hi, Todd. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm just getting depressed listening to the plans that the Republicans have, which is always the same. And it's just destroy. It reminds me of, remember on South Park, they had underwear gnomes? And they would, like, come and steal underwear, make money. They had no plan other than that. Always steal underwear, make money. They didn't know how they were going to make money with the underwear. And the Republicans, yeah, the same thing. We have right-wing media that doesn't tell their, you know, their, I want to say their viewers, anything. So no one's going to question them. Like, don't you kind of do the same thing, like, all the time? Don't you just kind of always wreck the economy? And right, they should never see money. Talk about fiscally responsible. They should never be shown money in any way. Because then they're like, money. Ooh, that's for me. Yeah, money and my friends. Are you, but nothing.
Are you saying they're kind of cartoonish, maybe?
Yeah, I mean,
your,
it's always
your point about
same.
South Park? Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about Republicans being like South Park. It's just, it's always the same.
Yeah,
and
being cartoonish.
Some, yeah, cartoonish. Like there's some other guy like Tyler something, and there's some ad, and the ad is like, yeah, things are bad under Biden. Vote for me and things will be good. Okay, thank you. That was informative.
Exactly.
It's just like, jeez, oh, I'm just so sick of these people. But you see, we have right-wing media that doesn't tell anybody anything, so they don't have to worry. I mean, their followers will follow them no matter what ridiculous thing they come up with.
I know. It's true what you're saying. You know, they're that's why they're called debate forums. They're not really called debates because they're not debates. And, you know, so right now Republicans are just saying, crime, crime. By the way,
yeah,
crime is lower now than it was in the 1990s. And but, you know, they don't say that part. And they nobody asks them, like you're saying. Nobody then says, OK, what's your plan to help the crime problem? They just and this is why, you know, if they were to win, which I really feel strongly that they're not going to, it would be, again, another case of the dog that caught the car. You know, they're not going to know what to do when they get in there. They're not going to have any,
right,
you know, so things aren't going to get better. Things are going to get worse. And then where
right,
are they? So, the,
right,
the, you know, they we've reached the bottom of the barrel with Republicans. They don't have any brain power between themselves at all.
Right.
You know, one or as a group, there's no brain power left. So if they were to win, like I'm saying, it they've all demonstrated, all of these statewide candidates on the Republican side have clearly demonstrated that they have no idea what the office they're running for is supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And this is why they don't want history taught, because then people would go, hey, isn't there a pattern here? Like, you always
exactly,
just keep doing the same thing and it never works. So that's why they're against history. That would make sense.
Exactly. Exactly. Say, Lynette, what did you do this weekend in the warm weather?
What did I do? Well, the things that I do are really just boring, you know, Minnesota things, you know, just like clean my apartment. I cleaned out the eaves on my apartment, even though the manager is supposed to do that. But I get up and clean the eaves before it rains. You know, just think of all these things.
At least some outdoor stuff, though, right?
Yeah, I did. I did some outdoor things. I went for a walk in Carver Park. It was very lovely.
Oh, yes. Good. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for calling in, Lynette. It's always fun to talk to you. And and then it makes me feel like people are listening other than my mom and Raina's mom.
All right. Well, you have a good rest of the show.
All right. Thank you. And thanks for your call. Yeah. So Lynette said she was feeling depressed because I was just talking about Scott Jensen and his lack of brain power. And I was just about to talk about a new story. This is in the Star Tribune just today. Minnesota will receive nearly $100 million in federal money in the next 3 years to help small businesses, especially those getting started. Now, I'm going to diverge from the article here for a moment to point out that although Minnesota vacillates usually between the top one and two in the nation for top five, 500, what are they called? What's that called? The 500 businesses?
The Forbes Fortune 500.
Fortune 500. Yeah. Okay. The Minnesota has the most Fortune 500 companies per capita. And if we're not top in the nation, we're usually number two. And although Minnesota has an awful lot of Fortune 500 companies, which means large corporations, still small businesses with less than 100 employees make up more than 99% of Minnesota businesses. Sounds unbelievable, but it is true. Every time I look it up again, I'm like, yeah, it's true. It really is true. Sounds like, I mean, I forget. I don't believe myself when I say it's true, but then I have to look it up. And anyway, so this is $100 million, you know, it's some money. It's relatively speaking, not that much, but it's going to be focused on nothing but small businesses. Governor Tim Walz and Steve Grove, the State Department of Employment and Economic Development, known as DEED Commissioner, announced the new money on Friday. It should not be difficult to get government help when you're a small business, and today it kind of is, said Grove. He directed small business owners and aspirants to the state's new online hub that bills itself as a one-stop shop for everything you need to know about DEED's resources for small businesses. DEED really is, again, going off of the now I'm no longer reading the article. As a small business owner myself, working with small business owners over the last few years, trying to help small business owners be heard at the Capitol primarily was what I was trying to do. Found that so many small business owners don't know that these resources exist. So DEED is kind of the place to go to find these resources. If you just Google DEED, Minnesota DEED, you can find their website and find some of these resources. So on that website, now going back to the article, business owners can learn about the sign up for updates about the federally backed Minnesota Loan Guarantee Program. Money for the program comes from the State Small Business Credit Initiative, which provided $10 billion to states and tribal governments as part of the federal stimulus package in 2021. Damon Jenkins, who is he? He leads the Minneapolis branch of First Independence Bank, the first black-owned bank in the state. Wow. Damon Jenkins. He says, this is big. This is exciting. Grove said, again, the DEED guy said, the first step for the new program is enrolling up to 20 banks, lenders interested in participating in the Minnesota Loan Guarantee Program can attend a webinar on October 26th. By early 2023, small businesses will be able to apply for loans with the approved lenders. With the federal support, the lenders will secure up to 80% of the principal on loans to eligible businesses. The guarantee mitigates the risk to banks. So it's basically really widening the chance that a small business is going to be able to get these loans. And there are a lot of small businesses that this would really help. There's still a lot of pain going on after the pandemic. My business is doing relatively well, but like I have reported on this radio station before. We suffered a lot with supply chain issues, and our customers are still still having delays. Not so much because of supply chain, now kind of because some of the companies that we work with, we have a company that does I design all these aluminum parts. We have one small business in St. Louis Park that does all the machining and welding of the parts I designed. And then another company in Plymouth, I believe, does the anodizing of these aluminum parts, which need to be anodized because the stuff that I designed works a lot with water. So water needs to run through these aluminum parts that I've designed, and the anodization makes it so that they don't corrode. Well, the anodizing company is low on staff still, as is the welding company. So all of our orders are still taking quite a bit longer than what we're used to, which really messes up my inventory working. I was used to putting an order in, you know, the timing of putting orders in and things like this. So it gets complicated when you're a small business owner. I wasn't taught any of this stuff. I'm just a guy who came up with this invention and started a business. And these are things that a lot of independent small business owners, this is really hard to navigate all of this stuff. So there are a lot of small businesses. My business doesn't really need a loan so much. We're just having trouble dealing with, and then our clients are having to wait. You know, they want to put an order in. They are getting gigs that they want to use our equipment for, and they're having to postpone their gigs to use our equipment because we're saying, hey, I don't have any more of this part, so you're going to have to wait a few more weeks. And, you know, it's pretty painful. So the pandemic is still having a large effect on small businesses. At least Democrats are trying to do something to help. They're not just pointing out the problem and complaining and saying it's all the Democrats' fault or the Republicans' fault. They're saying, hey, here's a solution. Here, small business owners, go to Deeds website and you can find this. We're going to try and make sure that if you need a loan, you can actually get it. We're really, really making the chances of you being able to get a loan that you need much higher because we've come up with a solution. I believe that's what we want our elected officials to do. So anyway, 952-946-6205 is the number if you'd like to call and make a point yourself here on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We'll be right back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil for a few more minutes today and then tomorrow again from 3 to 5. And then Matt will be back on Wednesday. I would like to announce that I am finally getting my podcast up. I have sort of a prototype of it up right now, but hopefully even after tonight I'll have like an actual URL that I can tell you to go to. But I will also have a link to this prototype going up as soon as I can later this evening on toddmickelson.com. That's T-O-D-D, M as in Mary, I-K-K-E-L-S-O-N.com. The podcast is called A Satellite View. And basically the description of it is, here on the ground, change happens fast. Problems feel frequent and urgent. It's loud and anxiety runs high. From a satellite view, the Earth looks the same as it did thousands of years ago. We've been here before. Let's learn from our past and shoot for a better future. And so that's kind of what it's all about. It's what I do a lot when I'm sitting in for Matt here on the show. I try and point out history and why things should be thought of in different ways, because we need to keep our history in mind. And part of how I do this is I follow other people who are freaks like me, who are obsessed with this kind of thing. A good source is Angry Staffer on Twitter. If you go to Twitter and look up Angry Staffer, a lot of knowledge, a lot of inside good knowledge. This particular thread, let's talk midterms, shall we? I'm just going to read his thread. There's a lot of analysis out there in my view, is completely missing the point about both the stakes of this election and the GOP's platform. Yes, the GOP wants to go after women's rights, Social Security, voting rights, Medicare, Medicaid, and the separation of church and state. That's all unpopular stuff. The GOP does not care about electability anymore. They envision a future in which votes don't matter. First, a little bit of backstory for our context. The GOP's base has been shrinking for decades. We outnumber them by a lot, and they know it. Even still, they refuse to budge from their antiquated ideas and draconian enforcement measures. So what's a party with a dwindling base and an unpopular platform to do? Easy. Coordinated fear-mongering from their well-oiled propaganda machine, voter suppression, and a war on schools. The constant barrages of caravans, big bad Dems coming to take your guns, claims of open borders, etc., are all a coordinated plot to keep their voters angry and voting. To be clear, they know it's BS. They also know their voters aren't smart enough to realize that. Speaking of dumb voters, the GOP war on schools isn't a coincidence either. They aren't banning these books because they hurt their feelings. They're banning those books because those are the blueprints they're trying to use. The GOP doesn't care about wokeness. They care about the inevitable draft away from the GOP that comes with being able to be the person you want to be and having the ability to think for yourself. Different is bad. Anything that doesn't conform to the hive mind singularity is woke. And wokeness means caravans of LGBTQ plus teaches are coming to take your guns and force you to have a rainbow hair and binge watch Queer Eye. So, I mean, this, you know, they have us trying to scare us with, you know, Disney cartoons like Frozen and stuff. So anyway, the GOP has decided that doing all of this is exhausting. Being perpetually outraged, promising year after year that the Dems are coming for your guns, keeping voters stupid and scared, etc., is a lot of work, right? So why not just steal power? Harper versus Moore is the most prominent bill out there right now, but it's far from the only GOP attempt to at election power grabbing. They want to be able to change votes. They want to invalidate your vote. That's why they don't care that nobody likes their platform. The way Angry Staffer sees it and the way I see it, we have a couple make or break elections coming up. Pundits are already telling you that the midterms are over, at least for the House, but that's nonsense. Turnout in Georgia should show everyone with doubts that we're still very much in this. If we do our jobs in 22 and 24, we can send an unequivocal message to the GOP that America does not support their BS. If we don't, it's not hyperbole to say the Republicans could be the Republic could be changed forever. So again, vote. I'm not trying to scare you with this stuff. The GOP is trying to scare their voters. But this really is the most detrimental election in our lifetimes. We have to vote. Everybody has to vote. No matter how, find a way to vote and find a way to make sure that all your friends and family vote. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil. I will see you again tomorrow here at AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.